All right. Our last lesson in the book of Ruth is called Embracing Responsibilities, and we're going to cover chapters 3 and chapters 4. The sub-question under our lesson title is, what does God expect me to do concerning those who need my help? And you know, we're talking about family in this chapter, but what Betty talked about a few minutes ago is our Sunday school family, our church family. So, you know, the question that I wrote is, how would your world work if you and others didn't accept any responsibility? So in the world, that in your little part of the world, this Sunday school is a part of that world. So how would it work if we didn't do things for others and check on them and help them and see about them, and not just in here but in our whole church family? So this lesson can kind of go from there. We all have responsibilities, and at times we all want to run away from them. Like my job this week, I could have run and never went back. It was so crazy. So I thought about that, but not just family, but any kind of responsibility. Many people in today's cultures have made the choice to refuse to accept responsibility. And unfortunately for them, their lives reflect that to the rest of the world, the choice that they've made, because to not have any, and I'm sure everybody knows or has known somebody that has just made that choice not to have any kind of responsibility, and it certainly reflects. Sin can be defined as the overall attitude of shunning responsibility. God expects us as His people, as believers, to show how responsible we are in the choices that we make and the behavior that we show to the world around us. He expects that from us as His believers. So let's look at our first verses in Ruth chapter 3. We're going to look at verses 10 through 13. And this is Boaz talking to Ruth. It says, "The Lord bless you, my daughter," Boaz exclaimed. "You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman. But while it's true that I am one of your family redeemers, there is another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he is willing to redeem you, very well. Let him marry you. But if he is not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until morning." Remember, she went to the threshing floor and uncovered his feet, because that's what Naomi told her to do, and lay down at his feet. And when he woke up, he saw her, and that's what he said to her. So, now Naomi, she struggled with bitterness because she lost her whole family. We can't forget that. She lost her husband, and then she lost both her sons. So she didn't have anybody. But she knew that God had shown kindness to her when Ruth was allowed to gather the grain that was left over in the fields of Boaz, who, just remember last week, we just talked about that he just happens to be a distant relative of Naomi's dead husband, Elimelech. So she was also aware of the stipulations in God's law, where about preserving family names and property allotments. And in Deuteronomy 25, just quickly, I'll look at that. That's where it talks about that, to give you God's perspective on it. Let's see. 25 verses 5 through 10. It says, "If two brothers are living together on the same property and one of them dies without a son, his widow may not be married to anyone from outside the family. Instead, her husband's brother should marry her and have intercourse with her to fulfill the duties of a brother-in-law. The first son she bears to him will be considered the son of the dead brother. So that is so that his name will not be forgotten in Israel. But if the man refuses to marry his brother's widow, she must go to the town gate and say to the elders assembled there, my husband's brother refuses to preserve his brother's name in Israel. He refuses to fulfill the duties of a brother-in-law by marrying me. The elders of the town will then summon him and talk with him. If he still refuses and says, I don't want to marry her, the widow must walk over to him in the presence of the elders, pull his sandal from his foot, and spit in his face. Then she must declare, this is what happens to a man who refuses to provide his brother with children. Ever afterward in Israel, his family will be referred to as the family of the man whose sandal was pulled off. So, bizarre sometimes to us, and extremely strange. That was God's law, and Naomi remembered that. So she remembered that, but unfortunately, there wasn't a brother-in-law because they both died. And so they didn't even have that option. But she also remembered that in order to preserve their property and any kind of well-being for themselves, that the law had to be followed in some sense. So in Ruth 3:1, let's talk about Naomi a minute. She says, one day Naomi said to Ruth, my daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you so that you will be provided for. Now this shows that this shows that she's still trying to contribute to their survival. She's not just sitting there whining and woe is me and I got all these problems and I lost my whole family and she just lost her husband and that's all. And she is still trying to help support the survival. We have to remember that, the survival of her and Ruth. Because if we talked about last week, the circumstances of them being alone without anybody to see after them, because first your father took care of you, then your husband, and then your son in your old age, and they didn't have any of that. So I think that Naomi showed gumption in our lesson last week. She was going to go back home, all the way back home. If you remember in the very first part, they left there because it was a drought, and it's a long way from Bethlehem to Moab. And she was going to go back there, take that long journey by herself. She didn't know what she was going to find, how she was going to survive, but she was going. Neither her nor Ruth were bystanders in their circumstances. They each took responsibility for themselves and each other.
And look in your Sunday school book, back in your Sunday school book, you'll see how far it was. If you look where Moab is, and then all the way up to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
That's a long way.
Long way. On foot. And just think of that. Just think about that just in general. I mean, would you want to do that? Take a journey on foot? Now, well, and Ruth was, Naomi was going to go by herself because, she didn't want them to go. And she's not a young whippersnapper either. So we just have to, I want y'all to think about and realize just how cool these two women are and what they did and how strong they were in their faith that God was going to take care of them because of, just physically the reality of the things that they were doing. So Ruth was okay too. She was really pretty cool. She had virtues. She had morals. And I do not believe that she would have ever done anything toward their survival that would have compromised her character. I don't believe she would have done that. She was willing to be humiliated, remember last week, and go out and pick up the, like the poor, God's law allowed for the poor people to, they're supposed to leave stuff on the ground for the poor people to pick up. She didn't have a problem with that. She didn't care if it, long as it meant survival. But that did not compromise her character. That grew her character. And I don't think she would have ever done anything. The proof of this, of Ruth's character, is in verse 10 that we read of chapter 3. It says, the Lord bless you, my daughter, Boaz exclaimed. You are showing even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. So, Boaz offered her a blessing. And in their day, a blessing given by someone like that was Boaz's way of approving of the type of person that Ruth was. He recognized the devotion that she showed to Naomi, and instead of chasing after some young guy that would have made her happy, whether he was rich or poor, like he said, he might have appealed to her more, she was willing to marry somebody that was older than her because of her sense of responsibility to Naomi. If Ruth had gone another way, the property and family line of Elimelech would have been lost forever. Now, if Ruth hadn't come back with her, it would have been lost. Think about that. Because Naomi couldn't have any more kids. She would have just, you know, I want to believe, because I like happy endings, I want to believe that if she'd gone back by herself, if she had made the trip, survived it, Boaz probably would have took her in and, you know, took care of her, and she'd have been fine. But the line would have been gone forever. In verse 11, Boaz gets excited because he tells her, "Now don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman." Now he's telling her this, and she's laying at his feet in the threshing floor. So he is excited. To him, Ruth is a great catch. She's young. She's probably pretty. And he wants her to know that nobody's going to think badly of her for marrying an older man, for coming to the threshing floor, because everybody thinks that she has good character. He then had to settle the matter of the other man in the family. There was somebody ahead of Boaz that was, I guess, a closer distant relative that had the right to have the property and marry Ruth and all that if he wanted to. Boaz's character shines in these verses too, because he was careful about following the law concerning the other man's rights. The other man might not even realize, you know, I took it to mean maybe he might, if somebody hadn't brought it to his attention, he might not have realized it. And Boaz could have just swept it under the rug and married her and gone on. But he didn't. He followed God's law. So that shows character there. He was primarily concerned for the well-being of Naomi and Ruth. Yes, it would have been great if he could marry her, but if the other guy was willing to step up, Boaz would have been happy, because regardless, that would have meant that the two women were taken care of. So their future took priority over what Boaz wanted personally. So him and Ruth are just upstanding, outstanding people. Aside from the love story that's beginning to take place between Ruth and Boaz, Ruth was committed to her decision to stay with Naomi till death. Remember last week? She's going to live where she lived, she's going to eat what she ate, and she was going to die where she died. Something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing a little bit of that, but she was going to stay till the end. Boaz accepted that his first duty was to the family. It wasn't to Boaz and what he wanted. It was to the family. So in one sense, a family is a network of responsibilities. Our families are network of responsibilities for us, and we all know that. We all are responsible for one another in our families. And we take responsibility, and we make things happen for our kids and whatever. But in a greater sense, a family is a network of people that you can depend on. You're to be responsible to your family, but isn't it wonderful to know that when something bad happens, who are the first people that you go to? Your family. Let's look at acting with integrity. Ruth 4, verses 1 through 4. So Boaz is going to the, he's going to find the other relative. Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then the family redeemer he had mentioned came by. So Boaz called out to him, "Come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you." So they sat down together. Then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to sit as witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, "You know Naomi, who came back from Moab. She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. If you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't want it, let me know right away, because I am next in line to redeem it after you." The man replied, "All right, I'll redeem it." So, we have a courthouse and other buildings where we go to take care of things like this. But the gate of the town was their courthouse, because everybody either entered or left. But that was the only way to in and out. So eventually, if you're looking for somebody, I guess you went and sat at the gate, because they were either going to come in or they were going to leave. If you missed them coming in, you'd catch them going out. So that was the courthouse of the town in Boaz and Ruth's day. They didn't have a large central area like a town square or anything. The streets were very narrow in ancient Israelite cities. And I thought about, well, they didn't really need them to be wide, because there wasn't any cars or anything. It was just for people walking and animal walking. So they were narrow. They didn't waste space on streets. The gate was a good place for business to take place, because everybody came in or out of the gate. So the guy comes. Boaz just went and sat and waited, and there he comes. Then he got the 10 elders that worked like the court. And they were the witnesses, because they needed to be the ones that finalized the legal agreement between Boaz and the other relative. And he explains the situation. He gives a fair opportunity to the guy to take the land. If the man had chosen to follow through, Boaz would have accepted it with grace and integrity. We talked about that, and he would have. He would have been just happy that they were taken care of. So let's look at our next verses, embracing a secure future. Verses 9 through 10, 13, and 17. Then Boaz said to the elders and to the crowd standing around, "You are witnesses that today I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon, and with the land I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her dead husband, and to inherit the family property here in his hometown. You are all witnesses today." And then verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. When he slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. And then verse 17. The neighbor women said, "Now at last Naomi has a son again," and they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David. So, now you go back to those verses. Now, he told him about the land, the other relative, and then he said, "Of course, when you purchase the land, you got to marry Ruth." And the guy goes, "Wait a minute." And I may be jumping ahead in my lesson, but we kind of stopped where he said, "Yes, I'll take the land." And then he got to thinking about it, because the way this works is all he does is make her pregnant. And then he provides for her, and he raises the kid all these years. But then when he gets up old enough, the land and any money, I guess, goes to the son. And he's out. He didn't get anything. So he's got all this responsibility. First he creates him, and then he raises him, and he provides for him, and then he's done. And the guy didn't want to take a chance of losing his inheritance from his family, the other part of his family, so he decided that it wasn't quite worth it. So I may be jumping ahead, but I just wanted to let you know how it ended up that Boaz got her, because I think Boaz, he had grace and integrity, but he said it exactly the way that he needed to say it to make the guy realize, wait a minute, the land's one thing, but having another wife and going through all that is a totally other ballgame. So, while this practice of a family redeemer might seem strange to us in today's world, its roots come from the need of three necessities. First, you're preserving a man's family name through his offspring, because this child, even though somebody else conceived it, is considered to be the offspring of the dead person, when that dead person didn't have anything to do with it. But that was the law. To pass the family property from one generation to the next so it'll stay in the family. The only connection was Ruth. Would have been Ruth to this other, you know. And then the third one is a deceased man's widow needed a son to provide for her in her old age. That was one of the ultimate things, is that now Ruth had somebody to take care of her in her old age. The Redeemer took care of the family until the son became of legal age. Then the son inherited the property of the mother's deceased husband and became responsible for taking care of her. And then the biological father, the Redeemer, had no legal right to the property or to financial support from, like, when he gets old. Like, if the other relative had done that, he didn't have any legal right for Obed to take care of him, because he did his part. So from an economic standpoint for the Redeemer, the expense of caring for the widow and her son were a sacrifice done in the name of the deceased husband, and that's all it was. So, and if he refused to take on, we read in Deuteronomy, then he was subject, if he refused it, then he would have been subject to public humiliation. So if Boaz hadn't been in the picture and this other guy was the only relative and he was given this opportunity and he refused, he would have been humiliated, like the verses in Deuteronomy talked about. The unnamed family member was willing to buy the property, take in and care for Naomi until her death, and then take full possession of the property. But when he heard about Ruth, see, he would have taken care of Naomi. He would have provided her a way to, a place to stay, food, and all that, like Boaz would have, I think, if Ruth hadn't gone back. But then when he heard about Ruth, he pulled back. He did not want that responsibility and then have it taken from him. So he defers to Boaz, which is what Boaz wanted. Why would Boaz want to take on this responsibility?
Because he loved her.
And we think, you know, from the first verses, he had workers, he had fields. They were working the fields for him. So we feel like Boaz was probably pretty well off anyway. He was a prominent man and well thought of, and he did not have any worries about financial strain on having a new family. And we don't think that... Well, we know he wasn't a young guy, because they talk about that. So he may have already been married and been a widower and didn't have any other responsibilities that were going to prevent him from doing this. He was in love with Ruth, and he held her in high esteem. He was motivated more personally to marry Ruth because of the way he felt about her than financially. Boaz may have not had any sons of his own. He doesn't talk about any, so leads me to believe he didn't. Obed was always called, this was interesting too, he was always called the son of Boaz and never the son of Mahlon, who was Ruth's dead husband, which was the purpose of the Redeemer, was to redeem that. But the most logical explanation is that Boaz made Obed his heir because he didn't have any other sons, and that would suggest that Boaz didn't have anybody else, so he made him, so everybody called him Boaz's son, because he was not only going to get his dead father's, but he was going to get everything Boaz had too. So both estates were preserved by Obed. The men of Bethlehem responded to all this by pronouncing a blessing on Boaz and Ruth, naming her among the matriarchs of Rachel and Leah. So this brought her in full ownership, full membership into the covenant community of Israel, and she's a Moabite, and they hated them. You know, there was big feuds between them. And then God himself blessed it by allowing Ruth to get pregnant and have a son. For Naomi and Ruth and Boaz, too, true security had been gained because of their unselfish behavior and because of their integrity. And they took responsibility for their circumstances, and they did something about it. Naomi showed it when she urged her daughter-in-laws to return to their families. That was her taking responsibility and saying, you know, she could have been, you know, oh, y'all please come with me and don't ever leave me and please always take care of me. But she urged them continuously until finally Ruth probably got mad at her and she told her she wasn't leaving her till she died. Ruth showed it when she proved herself a loving and dutiful daughter-in-law by being willing to do whatever short of ruining her integrity, messing with her character and integrity. And Boaz showed it through his generosity and his honesty, because like he could have deceived the other relative and there wouldn't have been anything they could have done about it. So, let's look real quick. I want everybody to turn to Matthew chapter 1. And we're going to find out why all this had to happen.
Chapter 1.
If you ever wonder, or if you're fuzzy about seeing the work of God, we saw it in this lesson, in this whole book of Ruth. Do you know the Jewish church during a certain holiday, the festival of feast or something, they read the entire book of Ruth through every time. Yep. Matthew chapter 1, let's look at verse 1. This is a record of the ancestors of Jesus the Messiah, a descendant of David and Abraham. So this is Jesus' lineage. Let's look at verses 5 and 6. Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother was Bathsheba, the widow of Uriah. So, how could that have happened if Ruth and Naomi and Boaz had not been so faithful to God? That is the hand of God. And that's His plan at work. That's why Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion had to die. For whatever reason, it was part of God's plan. It was their time to go. It was time for God to call them home. Because all the circumstances of Ruth had to happen so that she could have Obed, and Obed could have Jesse, and Jesse could have King David, and on and on and on, till you get to Jesus, where Mary gave birth to Jesus, who is called the Messiah. That's in verse 16. All these listed, this is verse 17. All those listed above include 14 generations from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the Babylon exile, and 14 from the Babylon exile to the Messiah. So, to me, that's the true hand of God showing us His plan and how it works. It's not always easy to understand, so that should help us understand sometimes why what we think God's plan is may not be even close to what His plan is for our lives. So what can we do? We can identify and embrace our responsibility by giving physical and spiritual care to our family members. Physical, by helping them if they need something. Spiritual, by praying for them, talking to them about Jesus. Commit to always act with integrity in all your family relationships. Always be honest and open and straightforward. Praise God for the blessings He gives to those who carry out their God-given family responsibilities. Because, you know, blessings come when you're doing the work of the Lord. They just come and they hit you sometime and you don't even realize where they came from or why. And then you feel like you don't deserve it. But He knows. There is never a day that goes by that each of us does not encounter some kind of responsibility in some kind of way. Right? Our very existence depends on responsibilities, taking care of ourselves, our health, how we are. If we get sick, we go to the doctor. If we don't feel good, we don't go out and work in the yard. our relationships, and especially in our spiritual, we have responsibilities in the relationships, because if we don't have, you got to work at them. And especially in our spiritual growth, we have a responsibility to ourselves for our spiritual growth. And how do we do that? We study God's Word. We talk to Him. Pray. Talk to Him. We interact with those that are other believers. We come to church. We take care of people in the church. Like Betty talked about this morning, that's a responsibility. And that came at a good lesson. Good time. Accepting responsibility and acting with integrity is what enables us to embrace a secure future. Look at the responsibility that Jesus took on. He didn't have to. He made the choice, just like we make choices every day. He made the choice. He could have stayed right up there at the right hand and said, nah, I'm not going to do that. He made the choice to embrace His responsibility, and He secured my future and your future and anybody else who believes. So let that motivate you this week. The choice that Jesus made to be responsible and share Jesus with somebody this week. Just because of what He did for us. Just because of the choice that He made. Does anybody have any questions, comments, complaints? Next week we go back to the New Testament, 1st and 2nd Peter and Jude, so that should be good.
You just be the only one, an old lady, because she was doing a lot, didn't she?
She did.
Come out and get a bottle.